All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. I'm Combo Breaker 99. This is episode 50. All right, y'all, back with episode 50. I can't believe it, man. 50 episodes deep now. I remember I just started a podcast last year around February. You know, I've just been up and down in some moments, you know, because I had some, you know, other things to take care of. So, you know, the show was always kind of off and on. But, you know, over the last few months, you know, I'd say like towards the last part of 2020, you know, I was trying to stay consistent with y'all. You know, so thanks to my new listeners and subscribers that have been coming through to hear the podcast and, you know, always kind of give their input on different topics we discuss over here. Yeah, man. And with 50 episodes now, you know, ain't no need to stop. I'm going to keep on going. Yeah, man. And for the 50th episode, as y'all can see, I got the new logo up for hashtag CB99 Talks now. That's the new logo right there designed by my man, Jamar Harris. So if y'all want to follow my man, Jamar, he's like a artist, painter, he's a designer. You know, he does like sneaker designs. You can follow him on IG at Jamar Harris. I'll actually post it here in the on this page. And y'all can also follow him at DipTerra_kicks. You know, he does like different designs for shoes. Yeah, he designed this little logo for me for the podcast. So yeah, definitely shout out to Jamar Harris, man, helping me kick this thing off right. You know, I want to continue to talk WMMA and going to bring back some boxing talk today as well. You know, when I'm going to talk boxing, I'll talk about the best fight, the best. And I want to just continue to address like the problems in boxing on this show and, you know, why some fighters aren't facing each other, you know, why they're being divas. We will talk about that. You know, we're just going to be real over here and continue to talk the problems with boxing. Whenever boxing starts to get good again, then we'll start doing technical breakdowns and we'll talk about real news. But as of right now, you know, it just seems like boxing is kind of at a standstill while MMA continues to prosper. You know, I mean, it's bringing over boxing fans. You know, they continue to talk, you know, they boxing fans continue to talk about how MMA is doing and they're kind of migrating over here now. So, you know, that's just how it is. But over here on this show, man, like I said, we'll address everything real and you just try to always stick with the facts. That's how we always do on this show. That's how I always do on this show. So yeah, man, just keep kicking with me and I'll keep on dropping episodes, you know, don't know how long, I'll just keep on going. But yeah, man, for today, I want to take it back to last weekend. I guess the theme of this episode is really called Sweet Revenge. You know, we had some solid fights last weekend. Dillian White got his revenge against Alexander Povetkin. We had Francis Ngannou get his revenge against Francis Ngannou. And if you don't want to call it revenge, we can call it redemption for both fighters because that's kind of what it was. You know, both fighters went back to the drawing board and they kind of did some soul searching. They kind of redefined themselves as fighters. You know, built up their discipline, built up their skill sets, and, you know, they came in there and got the win in the most dominant fashion that they could. You know, Dillian White, he went in there, did what he could, and it worked. Francis Ngannou, he made some excellent changes to his camp, excellent changes to his approach to fighting, and it worked. So we'll talk about that. And next, we'll talk about Terrence Crawford versus Manny Pacquiao. How real is this fight? I want to talk about the latest on the fight, and yeah. That's all I can really say about this, man. At this point, I just want the fight to happen. And Miranda Maverick, I want to talk about her post-fight interview that she did, you know, kind of talked about who she wants to face next. And, you know, it's kind of been rubbing people the wrong way once again. You know, we talked about it on another show after she defeated Leanna Jojua. You know, she talked about wanting to face Valentina in 2 years. And it continues to rub people the wrong way. So I just kind of want to address her confidence once again and kind of read between the fine lines that everybody's missing, you know, read the context there. And UFC 261 being sold out. I talked about this on a live stream yesterday, but, you know, I want to give you my final thoughts on UFC 261 with a full house and what that means in the midst of this pandemic. And last but not least, Mike Tyson in his recent words about Rose Namajunas and how it kind of got twisted up in the media and how it was twisted up, regurgitated, and fed to Weili Zhang and how she reacted to it. So, you know, I just kind of want to talk about how media needs to do better as well. So, yeah, man, going back up top, we had a good, you know, good weekend of fights. Like I said, man, boxing, you know, good heavyweight fight, Alexander Povetkin versus Dillian White. As y'all know, the first go round, it was a very competitive fight. I felt like Dillian White was doing the better work in the very first fight until Alexander Povetkin, you know, he made some nice adjustments with his left hook and scored a big highlight reel of a knockout uppercut on Dillian White and flattened him out. And this go round, Dillian White, you know, he took the right approach. You know, he went back in there and stuck to an excellent game plan. You know, didn't get caught in any firefights. You know, he just stuck to a basic jab in this fight, and the jab just opened up all opportunities for him. You know, like I'm always talking about, you know, jab is the key in a fight. You know, he made sure that the jab was always straight down the middle, straight down the pipe, utilizing his reach in this fight, landing good right hands until finally he landed a series of good right hands on Alexander Povetkin in the fourth round, and it opened up a beautiful left hook. Just when you thought it was the right hand that was going to knock him out, it was the left hook. Left hook knocked Povetkin out, and he couldn't continue. So, yeah, man, as a whole, I just like to see a fighter, you know, make the proper adjustments in a rematch, go back and look at the tape and say, okay, you know, this is the mistakes I made. You know, I just got to go back to the drawing board and say, look, okay, we can't do this. You know, this is what he did right. We got to take this weapon away from him. I know this go around a lot of people who say Alexander Povetkin, he didn't look as sharp, but Povetkin is always dangerous. You know, to me, Povetkin, he's always a dangerous fighter. He'll always go in there and he'll find a way to beat you. You know, he has those veteran tricks. He has power. He has boxing skill. I think it was just the fact that Dillian White, he took the legs away early by landing a very good stiff jab, followed by right hands early on. You know, he took the legs away with those beautiful right hands from the first round on. You know, and it's the heavyweight division. So you start chopping somebody down early with a good shotgun jab, telephone pole jab down the middle, they'll get out of there and like inside 12, you know. So Dillian White just stuck to a good game plan and kind of redeemed himself with this fight. You know, I'm not really a big White or Povetkin fan, but I am a fan of fights. And I am a fan of the fighter inside some of these fighters where they can just come back and say, look, I can dig deep, make the proper changes, come to terms and say, okay, I did this wrong. I was weak at this. Let's improve. And that's what he did. So moving on from here, Dillian White, I know it's been talked about him possibly facing off a title eliminator with Deontay Wilder. To me, that fight makes sense. I'm like, look, Deontay Wilder and Dillian White, they've been on a crash course for so long. You know, they've been talking trash to each other. You know, White has his word. Wilder has his words. Why not make this fight? You know, that's another common opponent with him and AJ. Let's see what Wilder can do in a comeback fight against a guy like this. I know Wilder wants to fight Andy Ruiz as well, but a guy like Dillian White, that would be a good test for him. You know, good test to see how far he's come since the Fury loss. And I know that Dillian White, he would want that fight as well. I kind of favor Wilder in it, but you never know what's going to happen, you know. So that's a good matchup for him. As for Alexander Povetkin, I think it's time to retire, man. Let's be honest. You know, he's 41 going on 42. I know his team has been talking about trying to get him to retire now. That's a wise decision. You know, the heavyweight division is not a division you want to hang around in, you know, at the age of 40, especially when you got knocked out several times in brutal fashion, you know. So for me, I say Povetkin's had his better days, you know, so just call it quits. I don't think he can really prove anything at this point against a Wilder, AJ, or Usyk, Dillian White, Ortiz, any of these guys. So just hang it up, you know, while he still has everything intact. So yeah, moving on. The main event last Saturday, Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. Like I always say, man, I love when a fighter can prove me wrong because that means they're doing something right. You know, my fan pick was Francis. My technical pick was Stipe Miocic. You know, I felt like Stipe was going to go in there, repeat history, and just do what he did. Do what he did last time. Take this fight to the ground, smother the offense. But, man, like Francis Ngannou, I was really impressed with his patience and his straight punches and his kicks this time. I love his variety of arsenal in the first round. Like, imagine if every heavyweight with power just conducted themselves in this type of manner where they just mix it up, have a good well-roundedness of takedown defense, good straight punches, kicks, great distance management, timing. You know, just looking at a guy like Francis Ngannou that did this, it just made me say, wow, this guy would be deadly if he continues to grow like this. You know, my keys to victory, I said Francis needs straight punches. If he commits to straight punches, everything's going to open up for him. Straight jab,
everything's going to open up. And that's what happened. Like, as soon as he started sticking a good straight jab in Stipe's face, I could see the reaction on Stipe. Good calf kick established, good leg kicks established. Stipe's reaction was different. It was to stay on the back foot. Because before, let's say the first fight, Francis Ngannou was much more predictable with his punches. Heavy-handed, but very predictable, where a guy like Stipe could just predict the punches. He could go in there and say, okay, I see this coming. I'm going to counter it with my own right hands, or I'm going to just smother him and take him down. This go-round, Francis was much more unpredictable. You know, he was punching straight, kicking, head kicks, body kicks. So Francis was kind of like, okay, I'm thinking about that power. I'm thinking about the power. When's it coming? Then boom, you know, double jab to the face, overhand right. So Stipe panics. He goes in for a takedown. And Ngannou, he defends this takedown. I was like, wow, the way he defended it, it was almost like some shades of Kamaru Usman. You know, he good wrestling. He put the weight on the back. He got the reverse, landed some good ground and pound, and just controlled the round. So I was like, wow, this guy's really looking for the finish now. I mean, like, in a much more methodical fashion. And the way he attacked in that first round, I was like, okay, it's only a matter of time this time around. I was like, okay, I got my pick wrong. I think Stipe is getting stopped here. Lo and behold, getting into the first round, Francis Ngannou comes out with those straight shots once again. Shotgun jab, drops Stipe. Stipe gets back up, tries to go into offense. Boom. Good short, compact left hook from Francis Ngannou. And I was like, wow. Wow. You know, Francis Ngannou this time around was not like a monster killer. You know, he was more of a patient assassin. You know, every assassin has to be patient, right? But I'm just saying, like, he was he's a patient monster in there. You know, much more patient, much more disciplined, where he said, okay, I've always got the game changer, so let me pick this guy apart this time around. You know, let's take a smart approach this time. You know, let's break him down. Let's switch levels. Let's go to the body. Let's go to the legs. And then eventually, when he continues to be wary of the body shots and the leg kicks, boom, we'll hit him with the head shot. And that's how it worked out. Head hunting started in second round. Once he slowly broke it down. So, yeah, it was just overall good performance. I mean, two rounds and everything you saw from Francis Ngannou, I was just like, man, this guy, he really went back and looked at the tapes and said, look, my cardio's bad. This wild punch is not going to do against a very educated fighter like Stipe Miocic. So I got to step up my education. I got to school. I got to take my behind back to school and say, look, this is what we got to do. And with the help of Kamaru Usman, shout out to Usman, he really did help this guy advance. And that's what I like to see, man. I just like to see fighters redeem themselves. That's why I hate to call it sweet revenge. Let's call it sweet redemption for both of these guys, Dillian White and Francis Ngannou. You know, I feel like they went back and wanted to better themselves. It wasn't about getting back at the other guy totally. You know, it's not always about get back, like I say, but it's about making yourself better. Because it would have been one thing if Francis Ngannou came in with the same approach like he did the first fight and knocked Stipe out. It wouldn't have been the same sweetness of victory, you know, because he would have gotten the same fashion. He wouldn't have grown as a fighter. He wouldn't have felt like, oh, okay, I need to improve on this. I need to improve on that. He would have just went in there, scored a wild knockout. And then the next guy after that would have took him apart, you know? So this time it was like, okay, Ngannou, he said, okay, I got to work on this. Got to work on my wrestling. Got to work on my takedown defense. Got to work on my straight punches. Much better improvements in that manner. You know what I mean? Like, much better result in that manner once you go back and improve like that. Same with Dillian White. So, yeah, man, overall, good card. UFC 260 once again, you know, lived up to the standards. It's Tyron Woodley. He's the only guy on there I would say needs to retire. That was a very, very devastating loss to Luque. Who else? Let's see. Who else on that card was? I'd say all the fights were pretty good. You know, of course, Miranda Maverick versus Jillian Robertson. That was a good fight, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But let's see. Francis Ngannou. Let's go back to Francis real quick. Man, John Jones. I don't know if this fight is going to happen now because it doesn't seem like they want to pay John Jones to fight that, pay him the money for the fight. They don't want to pay him the money he deserves for this fight. So I don't really know what to say on that yet, man. We really just got to see what happens with that situation. But as far as like getting these two in the octagon and just seeing them, you know, stand off face to face, I got to say, man, this will be one of the best fights in UFC history. You know, I think this is going to be a big test for the greatness of John Jones, and likewise for Francis Ngannou. You know, John Jones, he took to Twitter right after, said, "Show him the money and he'll take the fight." So that's all they got to do is show him the money. You know, give the guy the money, he'll take this fight, and we'll all get the best fight, one of the best fights in UFC history, man. You know, it's going to be this new and improved Francis Ngannou versus the legend and John Jones that some people feel is on the downside. You know, some people feel like he's on the downside right now, but I don't know, man. Like John Jones has that veteran in him. You know what I mean? Where you can kind of pull out whatever weapons you need against any type of fighter, and it can just become second nature where you can kind of fall into cruise control. But cruise control could be dangerous in this fight. I won't lie, it could be dangerous for somebody like John Jones. So somebody like John Jones with much better wrestling and much better variety of punches and kicks, you know, he still can't get a little overconfident because Francis Ngannou, he has that equalizer. You know, Francis Ngannou has that equalizer. But if Francis was to take the similar approach to John like he did against Stipe, man, I don't know, man. I think he could probably pull the win off, man, because as long as he keeps that power controlled, it's always going to keep his opponent guessing and overthinking and a little bit apprehensive of going on attack like Stipe was, you know? So, yeah, we just need to see this fight. Dana White needs to pay the guys what they deserve, pay a guy like John Jones what he's deserved, because, I mean, he's been putting on the best fights. He's a legend in the game. So just give him the money. That's really all I got to say on that, man. But if we get closer to it, you know, of course, I'm going to talk more and more about it. And if we got more news on in the next episode, I'll bring up some more. But yeah, man, guys, let me know what y'all thought of the fight, Stipe versus Francis in the comment section. And of course, if y'all aren't really big boxing fans, I recommend you go back and check out Povetkin versus White 2 and the first fight. Watch both of those fights. Solid fights. So yeah, man, moving on. Terrence Crawford versus Manny Pacquiao. Oh man, like I did a video like a couple of days ago talking about Terrence Crawford. You know, Bob Arum said that Terrence Crawford's next fight would be announced this week, within the week. You know, we're coming up on the tail end of the week now. It's Thursday. You know, Bob Arum said that a fight would be announced. It's a big fight, a major fight. It's a pay-per-view fight, right? So the choices that came into mind for me were Sean Porter, Manny Pacquiao, and Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman being the lesser of the two at this point, right? But it seems that yesterday everybody felt like it was going to be Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, I myself thought it was going to be Manny Pacquiao, June 5th. That seemed like the date that they threw out there. Manny Pacquiao versus Terrence Crawford, June 5th in Abu Dhabi on pay-per-view. But that was 2 days ago, actually. Yeah, 2 days ago. So yesterday, I pulled this up here and it says Pacquiao Crawford is nonsense. And this is said by Manny Pacquiao Promotions Chief. What is his name? Hold on. Let me pull his name up here. Sean Gibbons. Yeah, Sean Gibbons, who is the president of Manny Pacquiao Promotions, he went on the record to say that this fight doesn't make sense and this is just all blabber. He said Bob Arum and Mike Contz is just speaking nonsense about this fight. So as of right now, according to the chief of Manny Pacquiao Promotions, he's telling us that Manny Pacquiao versus Terrence Crawford is a no-go. Okay. It just seems like it's a no-go. I mean, it seems like everybody was on board with this fight. It seems like Bob Arum, you know, he kind of said, look, this is the fight that we're trying to get closer to making, and we'll be announcing it this week. But according to the chief, it's not. But my thing is, look, if it's not this fight, then what is it? Are they just kind of throwing us off the trail? And this is what I'm talking about with boxing. Like there's too much jerking around here. There's just too much you know, there's just too much talk here where it's like they talking in circles, just too much talking in circles, you know, where they lead you here and say, okay, we're gonna make this fight. Never mind, we're not making this fight. This guy's interested in this fight. We're getting tired of that. Really are getting tired of that, you know, and I just feel like if Bob Arum is telling us this is gonna be a big fight, what other big fight is there for Terrence Crawford, right? This sounds like the fight to make. And if they feel so confident in announcing it within the week, you know, why all of a sudden now are they saying this is this fight is nonsense? I don't know. I just don't know, man. But for Terrence Crawford, I'm really hoping that he can get a big fight at this point. You know, he's going on 34 years old and he continues to go on his knockout streak in the welterweight division against lesser opposition. When you compare it to guys like Errol Spence and even Manny Pacquiao. So he's really in need of a big fight to solidify his status as a top welterweight, if that makes sense. I mean, he is one of the top welterweights, but if he wants to continue to be number one pound for pound, you know, the competition has to step up. You know, the competition has to step up. I mean, I'm just really at a loss for, I'm really at a loss for words at this point on how to defend them, you know, whenever it comes to not making the big fights. I mean, we can kind of blame his re-signing with Top Rank. Is that it? Or is it just the guys at PBC don't want to fight him or vice versa? What's going on? You know, those are questions I think we all have because we really don't know the exact story behind the curtains. But for me, I just think that Terrence Crawford, he needs this fight right now with Manny Pacquiao. It's a fight that makes sense financially. It'll help build his significance up. You know, when you look at the big picture, but when you really think about it, you know, Manny Pacquiao, he's been out of the boxing ring for 2 years. So it's not really a win that's going to prepare him for a fresh guy like Errol Spence, but it will do something big for him financially. And it could be his De La Hoya, you know, similar to Floyd Mayweather. You know, this could be his De La Hoya. He's Floyd Mayweather and this is De La Hoya, you know, so that could be big for him in that fashion. But, yeah, he's been out of the boxing ring for 2 years. You know, the other choice we had on the list was Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman, he's been out of the boxing ring for 2 years, so that's not really a major fight there. The only other fight on that list that I'm hoping they announce is Sean Porter. You know, word is Sean Porter hasn't activated his mandatory, which I don't really know why you have to activate it if you are number one. If you pay for the sanctioning body to put you in the rankings and you're number one, that should just force the champion to fight you regardless, right? I don't understand how you have to activate that. So just a bunch of crazy talk with boxing once again. I mean, there's really nothing like solid on the forefront. And it's like the end of the week, like I said, you know, when we still haven't had any solid news of Terrence Crawford. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to talk about that because I thought that was a good matchup for Crawford to put his name out there in Abu Dhabi against the legend and Manny. And yeah, another thing I want to talk about real quick is everybody felt like Terrence Crawford beating Manny Pacquiao would elevate his status to 50-50 against Errol Spence. At this point, I'm not going to argue. Just make it 50-50 with both of these guys. Spence and Crawford, just make it 50-50. I mean, yeah, we know Spence is making, you know, he's making the better moves and he's in position to get the majority of the belts. You know, he's got the WBC and the IBF belt. If he takes Ugas in July, he'll have the WBA belt. So he has those three top significant belts. The last belt will be WBO belt, Terrence Crawford's belt. So it would make sense, you know, to give Errol Spence the most money here. But I'm kind of at a point where we're like, look, if they can't agree on 60-40, and, you know, 70-30 is kind of, it's a little messed up, you know, to give Crawford 30%, you know, even for that matter, because if you want to be undisputed, his belt is still worth something. So it's got to be at least 60-40. You know, that's how I feel. But at this point, I just want to fight, you know, just make it 50-50. I mean, how do y'all feel about that? You know, if you're still following boxing, but, yeah, man, my final thoughts on that topic, the Crawford Pacquiao, man, give the fight to Crawford, man. Just make this fight happen in the summertime in June. And like I said, maybe this will build up Crawford's status and push us closer to Spence Crawford. You know, Spence has a fight with Ugas. He gets his three belts. Let's finish this off with Undisputed sometime at the end of the year, man. So, yeah, man, let's jump to the next topic here. Miranda Maverick, after her, you know, unanimous decision over Jillian Robertson this past weekend at her post press post-press conference, you know, she talked about who she would like to fight next. And, you know, one of the names that popped up was Antonina Shevchenko. You know, as she said, you know, Antonina Shevchenko has Andrea Lee in front of her. You know, that fight's coming up. But she said if Antonina, she would like to fight either one of them, Andrea Lee or Antonina Shevchenko. But if Antonina Shevchenko won, she would like that fight 100% because it would be like leading her to take on the next sister, Valentina Shevchenko. You know, she said if she gets that fight, that would lead into, you know, it would definitely be like a path to leading into fighting the sister, you know, Valentina Shevchenko. And, you know, when she spoke on that, it kind of ruffled feathers once again, because every time Miranda Maverick does an interview, media always brings up the champion. You know, they always bring up the champion. And, you know, Miranda Maverick, she will acknowledge that. She doesn't talk around it. You know, she doesn't stutter step. You know, she doesn't sound scared. She sounds confident. She is a fighter that's going to acknowledge the champion. And I'm one of those people that can't get mad at that. You know I'm a Miranda Maverick fan, but if it was Jessica Andrade, I would be cool with that. Because I'm cool with that for the fact being that fighter has a goal. And the last time out, other episode, I talked about Miranda Maverick, you know, she's a goal-oriented fighter. You know, she's not fighting just to fight. You know, she's not going to school just to go to school. You know, she's not trying to be a full-time student, a career student or a career fighter. You know, she wants to retire from the game at an early age, but she wants to retire as a champion. You know, same with school. You know, you want to finish school so you get your PhD. You know, same deal. So they're very similar. You know, you don't go to school forever. You don't want to fight forever. You know, the end game is the belt. So if she comes into the game and says, Valentino is what I want, that's what she's supposed to say, because that person has the belt. It's like if Caitlin Chookagian had the belt, she would say, I want Caitlin Chookagian. You know, so it's just confidence talk and it's goals. And I think that kind of upsets a lot of people when they see a fighter with goals. They just got so used to everybody talking in circles and stuttering, like I said. But she's been one of those fighters that, you know, since I talked to and done an interview with, you know, that speaks very confident, not arrogant or cocky, you know, but a fighter that really knows what she wants, you know, and that's a good thing. You know, they know what they do wrong. They know what they need to work on. They know what they do right. And that's something that she brought up in her post-fight interview, that, you know, she's hard on herself. Matter of fact, let me read the interview. Hold on. Read some of the interview with y'all. All right. So at the post-press fight conference, she said this. Post-fight press conference. That's what I said. All right. Here we go. So Miranda Maverick, she said, I'm pretty hard on myself. I want to go back and rewatch it. I obviously made a mistake in the second round. I honestly can't remember how I got taken down specifically. I defended the submissions well, but I wish I could have turned it around a little bit faster and have been on top. So, yeah, she's hard on herself, like I said, because she likes to try to be, you know, strive for perfection. And she did make a mistake in the second round when she threw that Superman punch. I'm sure she went back and watched it. But, yeah, she threw the Superman punch and boom, Jillian Robertson timed it, ducked under, took her down to the ground. And, yeah, she did defend the submissions well. So, yeah. She's a fighter that wants to work on being well-rounded. You know, she wants to come in there and make sure she's polished. You know, so she always goes back to the drawing board and works on things. And here's something she said about just being a confident fighter at her age. You know, for one thing, I don't like that whole age thing being mentioned. I do like that I'm young and I got more head, but I don't think it's an excuse to be bad, if that makes sense. You know, there's Macy Barber. She's very young too. There are fighters who are young in the UFC and have done really well. I'm hoping to be that one that isn't just a hype train. So yeah, she's trying to be more of a fighter that's well-rounded and earn things, you know, not just be hyped up by the media and the crowd. And that's one reason I'm a fan of her. Like, the difference between her and Macy Barber is, like, Macy continues to be hyped by the media, Dana White, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done there. And there's still a lot of work that I'm not seeing from her, you know, where Miranda Maverick, I'm seeing hard work from her. And it's really coming out through the performances and what she says. But yeah, let's go to this next part here on what she wants next. All right. So she said, I've said in a couple of other interviews earlier that Valentina Shevchenko is the one that everybody's trying to get. I got criticized the first time that I had my debut with the UFC. They were like already calling out the champ. I was like, no, I didn't. I said within 2 years, I'm going to be able to fight Valentina for the title. I'm still of that mindset, and I'd like to beat her sister first. So, yeah, once again, 2 years. That's what I'm trying to tell people every time. It's like she has a goal, and it's 2 years. People forget that. Like, they just hear Valentina Shevchenko, and they think, oh, this girl's trying to bite off more than she can choose. But she's saying 2 years, y'all, 2 years. That's realistic, right? You know, she wants to become a title contender in 2 years. And that's realistic to me. You know, as long as she keeps making moves the way she's doing and, you know, continues to work hard, becoming well-rounded, she will be a fighter that could possibly challenge Valentina in 2 years. You know, same as with her school. You know, she sets a goal and says, okay, I could be out of school in this matter of time. I could have my PhD in this matter of time in 2 years. Same deal. You know, they're two different things, of course, school and fighting, but they have very similar structures. You got to fight your way up the rankings, graduate each level, and then you're rewarded, you know? So it's the same thing, man. So I think a lot of people just got to understand where she's coming from, man. Like, she's a fighter with an end game. You know, she doesn't want to fight forever. She wants to go ahead and try for the championship. If she gets it, I think she just wants to retire after that at an early age. So it's doable, man. And it makes sense. So yeah, man. I just wanted to bring that up again because there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. You know what I mean? Like, you can be arrogant. There's a difference between confidence and cockiness. Let's put it that way. You know, cockiness and people that are hyped up, they just continue to walk the walk, but they can't really talk the talk, or they can't really get down whenever, you know, going gets tough. You know, I think Miranda Maverick, she's willing to acknowledge that she's not the best, but she's a hard worker. She continues to work at being the best, you know. And, you know, something I've seen in other fighters like Floyd Mayweather and Andre Ward, and I'm not saying she's on that level yet, but her work ethic is starting to mirror some of those champions. And if she continues to work at it and polish herself and not get caught up in the hype in the media, then you probably will see her, you know, fighting in the top 10 or in the top 10 by the end of this year. So, yeah, guys, moving on. Let me know in the comment section what y'all think. If y'all keep up with Miranda Maverick, what y'all think of her call-outs of Antonina Shevchenko? And when do y'all think she will challenge Valentina Shevchenko? So, yeah, man, real quick on these topics. You know, I discussed them over and over with y'all. UFC 261, it sold out, 15,000 deep. You know, Dana White, like I said, he went from taking safety precautions, you know, to restrictions, no live gate, to straight up full house. You know what I mean? Like, last event was just, you know, a regular non-live gate, you know, straight up pandemic protocols and everything. This time around, it's like, boom, 15,000. Sold out in minutes. Usman, Masvidal 2, Shevchenko Andrade, Namajunas, Weili Zhang versus Rose Namajunas. Three title fights on there, and he was ready to amp it right back up to a crowd in Jacksonville, Florida. So I see where he's coming from. You know, he's trying to make money back after taking some hard hits during this pandemic. But at the same time, I think that 15,000 is just too risky right now. You know, I know he wanted to pull some business moves here. You know, Texas is opening up. Florida's been going crazy with it. You know, Atlanta, Georgia, you know, it's just like off the hook as well. So, you know, he made sure he could target the right place where you could pull out 15,000 people who had cabin fever and they're ready to cure that cabin fever, you know? So he's ready to kick it back off like everything's back in the norm. And I mean, like I said, with the vaccines going around now, you know, everybody's going to try to start living normal and they're going to think it's normal. But out of this 15,000 people, how many of them are really vaccinated, you know? And how many are really going to follow precautions in a post-pandemic world? If we are in a post-pandemic world, really, I still feel like we're still in the middle of the pandemic, but how many are really still going to take precautions now? I don't really think that many of them will, you know, since they're selling out now, a lot of these people are feeling like everything's back to normal. And we know how people act when everything's back to normal. Whenever people think everything is all good, they go right back to not washing their hands, sneezing in other people's faces, you know, drinking out of other people's drinks or whatever, you know, they just go right, you know, back to square one, everything that started it. You know, nobody takes the safety precautions anymore. You know, they don't, they abandon the masks. You know, they start back, just going back to where the way it used to be, you know, and that's kind of how I feel it's going to be on fight night, which is very scary. You know, I think that we will see a number spike after April 24th. I just hope to God that none of the fighters, you know, test positive after, you know, anybody gets sick on the team, or, you know, any of the commentators or cameramen get sick, or anybody. I don't want to see anybody get sick from it, you know. But we got to be wise too. We got to be realistic and understand that 15,000 people now, they're going to feel like there's no need to wear a mask because, you know, they're like, oh, I'm surrounded anyway. There's no social distance possible, you know. And then you got to read the fine print on the ticket. I'm not going to read it again. I read it in a video already, but that fine print is crazy, man. They're really covering their tail here. You know, Dana White is really putting out that play at your own risk. You know, he's really putting out that play at your own risk, that look, I'm opening it up. All y'all can come out, but just realize, look, if you get COVID, hey, you can't blame us. You can't blame us for loss of income or for heart failure or loss of breath or a fever. Everything is covered in that fine print, y'all. So my thing is, look, if y'all want to do it, fine, but try to be as safe as possible. You know, please wear a mask. You know, please wash your hands and try to practice social distancing. I don't know how you will, but I really don't know, because I was reading another article where they said, look, we are going to have a full house, but we're still trying to hammer down on people practicing social distancing. I was like, okay, good luck with that. You know, good luck with that when you have the whole house full. But boxing didn't even actually take that approach. You know, boxing, when they opened their first event back in December, they had 16,000 people. Okay, they did a 16,000 event, but it was, I think it was like in a, I think like a 30 or 40, 50,000 venue that could seat that many people, but they did like the spaces, you know, they tried to make it where everybody had to sit like three seats apart or two seats apart, and people were still wearing masks. Of course, there weren't people wearing masks, but they were still trying to lay that law down. So yeah, with this one here though, man, I can kind of smell a number spike. I could see a lot of positive tests coming out of here. Hopefully nobody tests positive leading up to the fight, you know, any of the fighters, no fights get canceled, but I kind of have that feeling, man, like people are going to be walking out of there hot, man. There's going to be a lot of people getting hot. So I just don't know, man. I'm not ready to go out and test the waters yet. But if I was to go, yeah, I would try my best to, you know, be safe and just wear a mask. So all these people out there, they just kind of need to practice that and just practice, you know, clean habits. You know, that's how a lot of this stuff happens. A lot of these viruses go around, you know, people just, you know, being straight nasty, you know? So yeah, man, that's my final thoughts on that. I don't know if it is a smart idea, like I said, but you know, money makes people do crazy things. And I think that's one of the big things on why this thing is taking place. Good fights overall though. Good fight card, very stacked card. I do like the card. I will be watching from home. But yeah, man, last topic. I recently did a video talking about Weili Zhang and her reaction to Mike Tyson and some things he said about Rose Namajunas, you know, which they weren't really directed towards her, but she thought they were. So Weili responded back. And I just feel like, you know, with that whole situation, you know, media, they just really need to take a better approach and stop trying to twist words around to start wars or start, you know, beef between two types of people, you know, or stop trying to push certain narratives and agendas. It's not a time to do that. You know, you don't do that with combat sports. You know, this is a, you know, these are people that are trying to make a living and they already have to find ways to fight and dig deep and fight for what they want to do and, you know, fight for a living. So we really don't need that type of, we don't need that type of smoke in the game. I mean, going back, as y'all know, Weili Zhang, she responded to Mike Tyson when Mike Tyson, she thought Mike Tyson said Rose Namajunas was going to destroy her. If y'all want, y'all can go back and listen to my whole video on that. So, you know, Weili Zhang, she responded and said, Mike Tyson doesn't really know anything about MMA. Don't address anything you don't know. And, you know, keep it at that. But I've also had some people respond to my video. You know, they told me that, you know, people that could speak Chinese, they told me that the way she responded back was more so in a friendly manner. So I was like, okay, which I could see that, you know, Wei Li doesn't really seem like the type of fighter to just kind of shoot off and just fight with words, especially, you know, whenever she's dealing with, you know, Americans sometimes, because she doesn't know what people are saying. She doesn't really speak English. So if the media knew, which they did, they probably just, you know, butchered it and, you know, switched it up and served it up to her and said, look, Mike Tyson said Rose is going to destroy you. You know, so she probably just kind of was like, okay, you know, I'm not really going to take that as fighting words because I'm not fighting Mike. So, you know, some of my subscribers and commenters, you know, they told me that she just responded in a friendly manner, which, okay, I believe that. I can believe that. And if she did, that's cool. But, you know, the way the media had posted up the interview, you know, they went back and made it seem like she responded like, yo, Mike don't know anything about MMA, so don't talk about it. If you don't do it, don't do it. That's kind of how they typed the text out. But as y'all know, like I said, when I heard it on Hot Boxing with Mike, you know, he was talking to Dana White, and it was like barely a minute. It was like a minute of talk between, you know, Mike and Dana about Wei Li and Rose. And Wei Li's name was just mentioned that one time in the beginning. And then they talked about Wei Li versus Joanna later on. You know, Zab Judah talked about it. But Mike, he basically said that, you know, Rose is no walkover. You know, he was like, oh, Wei Li, oh, Rose is no walkover. Her next opponent, Rose is not a walkover. You know, she's a vicious girl. You know, she's a sweet girl. And, you know, she'll rip your heart out. She'll destroy you. You know, he was just talking about in a manner of speaking, like she's that type of person that's beautiful but dangerous. That was just his description of her. It wasn't the actual breakdown of a fight. You know, he wasn't talking about the outcome of the fight. So, you know, of course, Beijing media, they switched it up and they said Mike said Rose is going to destroy you. You know, so according to my, you know, commenters and subscribers, they told me that Wei Li just responded in a, you know, friendly manner. In more of a funny manner, you know, she was just kind of like, oh, wow, okay, you know, don't talk about something you don't know. So I was like, okay, I'm cool with that. But it's not Mike's problem. You know, Mike's not to blame and Wei Li's not to blame either here. I think it's just the media. You know, it's the media in between that just kind of wants to start a war or try to create, you know, like a false tension and false dislike here between two fighters. You know, Wei Li and Rose are already respectable martial artists. You know, you can't build up like a false narrative there because they're respectable martial artists who enjoy the fight game. They fight for a living. They don't fight based off of scripts given to them by fake media or wannabe media. They fight because they want to. They fight because they choose to. So there's no need to build up fake stories in here or try to twist words around when nothing like that was said. So I can only imagine, man, like how tough it is being a celebrity sometimes. You know, sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't care about celebrities, but sometimes I kind of feel sorry for him because somebody like Mike, even Mike Tyson, like he's probably been dealing with this every day of his life, you know, since he started as a boxer. You know, he'll say one thing and the media will twist it. So in this interview, he was like, oh, Rose is sweet. She'll destroy you. Then all of a sudden the media goes, yo, y'all hear what Mike said? He said, she's going to crush, you know, murder Wei Li. You know, they do that type of thing where they just switch it up. So it's kind of a hard life for a celebrity. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I understand that, yeah, they have to be on their P's and Q's about some of the things they say, even when they don't mean to say anything. So yeah, man, like I said, I just want to go back and talk about that with y'all real quick. My final thoughts on it as far as a topic, you know, I'm just like, yo, media got to do better. You know, media just needs to really do better reporting stories, you know, just be honest with it. And I know honesty and media, you know, those two words don't go hand in hand, but they really just need to be truthful to it, especially with two humble fighters like Wei Li and Rose and, you know, a knowledgeable fighter like Mike Tyson, you know, who was just talking MMA with Dana White. You know what I mean? There's enough crookedness going on. So, you know, just be real with it. Like I said, that's the only thing I can tell you because that's the only thing I know. So yeah, man, that's pretty much all I got for this episode, guys. Like I said, I just kind of want to go back and talk about some of last fight weekend and some of the things I talked about in videos. You know, I just want to kind of have full out discussions here with y'all, just in case y'all missed the video. You know, check it out here. I'm about to post this podcast up ASAP. You know, I want to go ahead and get this thing out for y'all. But yeah, like I said, just come through, you know, just doing this off the dome once again. And I just want to kick it with y'all for the 50th episode. Talk MMA, more boxing will be coming. And yeah, final thoughts as a whole, everything I talked about, redemption, you know, but for Dillian White, for Francis Ngannou, I like to see guys prove me wrong. I like to see them improve as fighters, redeem themselves, not look out, not always going out for revenge, just trying to better themselves. Crawford Pacquiao, make it happen. That's it. Miranda Maverick, confident fighter. You know, I think that a lot of people just kind of twist her words up. At the same time, they don't read the words that she said as well. So, you know, that's something other things people need to do, man. Read everything. Read everything. Don't just let little words trigger you. UFC 261, definitely watching it. I'll just put it that way. I'm going to be watching, paying for the pay-per-view. And again, media, y'all just got to do better, man. Stop twisting up the words. But yeah, man, happy 50th episode, everybody. And thanks to my subscribers, you know, my day ones like Marcus Bell, Robert the Savage, No Filter, Coach, everybody that's been supporting me. You know, new people like Colton that come through, Gary Baldwin, and so on. I'm just naming y'all off the top. So, you know, forgive me if I missed y'all, Lolita, BAC, and ME, Mr. Lee, all of y'all. I'm just kind of doing off the top, man. So, yeah. Also, what else? CB99 Talks is up and running. You know, I'm just in the midst of posting all the episodes, all the past episodes. So go check out CB99Talks.com. It's just the archive where I post all the episodes. You know, it's like a blog where I post all the podcast episodes. And if y'all missed the first few episodes, y'all can see them there now. But I'm just posting them up chronologically. And then after that, you know, I'll be caught up. And then the episodes will be out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, all of that. So yeah, go ahead and start checking it out now. I'm in the midst of uploading now. So yeah, guys, I'll catch y'all on the next one. Make sure y'all subscribe. Combo Breaker 99. I'm out. Peace.